All right, man, this is literally my favorite time of the year. Well, quite frankly, I think it's all our favorite times of the year because college football is here. It's right around the corner. And I know that it's right around the corner when I get my pick six previews in my hand. This is the highlight of the offseason for me. It's my favorite preview magazine. Brett Ciancia, pick six previews back again. How's it going, man?
Yeah, Mike, thanks for having me on. It's our annual stop here on the preseason tour. And, you know, I want to say congrats to you and cousin Shane for you guys are exploding right now. I see on the Netflix documentary. I see all over media days. So, you know, and it's hard, you know, many years of hard work paying off. So congrats to you guys as well. Thanks for the praise for the magazine. It's that time of year again. Everybody's undefeated. Everybody's optimistic. So it's excited to break down this the season with you. But congrats to you guys. And yeah, let's break down the season.
All right. But hey, before we do that, I love to lead with this. Brett, can you tell the listeners how can they get their hands on a copy of the Pick Six Previews?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's online, picksixpreviews.com, on Twitter, at Pick Six Previews. That's all spelled out. And we have the digital copy as well as the hard copy magazine. If you buy the hard copy, you also get the digital. That way, for those 2 days where it's being shipped, you have access right away. And yeah, what it is, it's a one-man show. It's all 68 Power 4 teams. And the claim to fame is that in prediction accuracy, it's graded number one the last 10 years and the last 5 years. So, but I think it's more than just prediction accuracy. You know, position by position breakdowns, really readable format. You've got the advanced stats in there, and it's all color-coded too. So hopefully a fun read, and but informative too. It packs a punch. So thank you for that. And yeah, go check it out, picksixpreviews.com. We got some samples up there, some testimonials, but just take SEC Mike's word for it. That's the only testimonial we need here.
Yeah, and I'll make sure to put a link in every, however you consume this podcast, there's a link in the description to get your own Pick Six Previews. And then this year, Brett is upping it with his Pick Six Plus. Can you tell us, you know, what was the thought process here and what are you trying to accomplish with Pick Six Plus?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, everyone's familiar with the preview magazines. I mean, that's a common staple here. It's its own industry. But I found that once the season kicks off, you know, it's mid-September, it's like drinking from a fire hose. You have 60 games kicking off. You're trying to find all the info and stay up to date so quick. I find that in the past, I'd open like 30 tabs on my browser. I'm trying to, you know, link everything together. So what I did with Pick Six Plus is I put it all into one page for you, team by team. It's all the stuff you love from the preview magazine, all my advanced stats and numbers. But then more of it against the spread betting trends as well in there too. So you got game logs, situational splits, you know, how's a team off of a bye? How are they as the home favorite? All that kind of stuff that you love to see. Talent acquisition matchups, you know, you look at your next opponent, see how you stack up. But anyway, I've got a sample on picksixpreviews.com there /plus. And yeah, it's emailed every Tuesday in the fall. So that way you have it in one place, all the relevant info that you can have. And yeah, I encourage you to go check it out. It's, you know, it's packed to the brim with information, but that's the goal.
Nice. I can't wait to check it out. But one thing that, you know, I think you're already going to catch some hell for, Brett. That, and again, this is all in good fun, right? But you do have a section in your magazine, the Blue Blood Programs, and not listed. And again, this is not your opinion. This is something you did from a poll, but I have a feeling down in Athens, Georgia, they're going to take big exception to Georgia not being listed among the Blue Bloods. How surprised were you when you saw that?
Yeah, I think they have a definite claim to it. And, you know, it's funny. This is one of those off-season topics that comes up. And, you know, college football Twitter gets very animated over it in February and March when it's cold out and there's nothing to do. And you see that Blue Blood argument come up every year. So finally what I did, I just said, hey, let's just do a huge poll, a huge Twitter poll. I know that's not scientific at all, but 175,000 voters, that's a decent sample size. And what we did is just you list out 20 different teams and a simple yes, no. You know, is this program a Blue Blood, yes or no? I like to say with 175,000 voters, you get 175,000 different opinions of what a Blue Blood means. So, you know, all that to say, there's a distinct pack of 8 schools every year that is voted up there. And that doesn't fluctuate. I mean, you might have Nebraska going through its worst decade ever. You might have Georgia riding a dynasty, but they remain in their pack. It's like these are the 8 and these are the others. So I don't agree with all the ones that the voters pick, but it makes for good discussion. It's just a little fun poll we do every year.
And then Tennessee, they went down 35 percentage points. What the hell, Brett? Did you put out this poll the night after the Ohio State playoff game or something?
You know, I think that Gainesville might have gotten a hold of that poll. You know, I think Gainesville and Athens, they all got hold of that poll. It's weird. You know, I might put in a thing next year where I make it like a half an hour long. That way it can't spread into these fan sites and message boards. You see that with Nebraska and Texas a lot. You know, the one year Texas got tanked in the rankings, I think Oklahoma was retweeting it like crazy. So, you know, it's good fun there in January, but yeah, people love to argue about it. It's great.
Yeah. Well, another reason to really go out and get the Pick Six previews. There's so much unique information that only you have that is different from other college football preview magazines. And one I wanted to hit you with was the win conversion, which is essentially, correct me if I'm wrong, recruiting rankings over a period of time matched up against total wins during a specific time. And number one currently in the SEC, which I thought was pretty interesting, Missouri. Can you go into your win conversion and why Missouri leads that?
Yeah, so, you know, everyone talks about recruiting, and I think that really is an important part. That's the, you know, the backbone of a program. You have to recruit well. You have to bring in high-quality transfers. But that's not the end point. You need to bring them in and then also have schemes that work. You have to recruit to fit your schemes. You got to have player development, player retention. Now with this portal going crazy, you got to actually retain your recruits. So I tried to put in a couple formulas, and you know, player development is one I call where it compares recruiting rank to NFL draft output. You know, are you actually developing your players and sending them to the pros? And then the one you mentioned is win conversion. Similarly, it's your recruiting ranking versus your actual on the field output. Are you winning games? You know, is it all working? So, and I find that you find the most value at the extremes, you know, the top 10, the bottom 10, you know, everyone in the middle. For example, Alabama, Georgia, they're going to be number one in recruiting, number one in wins. So they're a net zero, you know, they're acting like they should. So I think you find value at the extremes. And Missouri right now, yeah, they're an extreme within the SEC framework where they're not the top recruiter, although that is definitely improving. They're signing their best classes ever, but you know, towards the bottom of the SEC in raw recruiting, but they're winning at a great clip. I mean, a couple double-digit win seasons there back-to-back and another good one last year. So, yeah, they certainly earned that spot. So that's a good testament to that coaching staff and what they're building there in Columbia.
Yeah, and you mentioned player development. I wanted to hit you with that as well because I guess it shouldn't come as a surprise after the latest NFL draft, which featured a lot of South Carolina Gamecocks, but South Carolina leads the SEC in your player development ranking at number six in the country. So again, much like we could credit Missouri for wins on the field, we have to credit Shane Beamer and company for really getting some guys and developing them into NFL players.
Yeah, for real. And these metrics they're a little bit lagging. Like they cover a 4 or 5 year sample size. But I'll say this: when I started the formula about 10 years ago, South Carolina was towards the bottom. So big credit to Shane Beamer and his staff for flipping the script there. Now they're on the plus side of player development. And what you find there is that they recruit outside the top 25 on average, or maybe outside the top 20, which in other leagues, you know, that might be number two in the ACC. But in the SEC, you're talking that's like 13th or 14th in the league. So with that background, within that context, yeah, they're churning out pros pretty good. So, yeah, they're doing a great job there coaching wise.
And then maybe my favorite metric that you use, Brett, the game grader. Can you quickly rehash for the audience what exactly that is?
Yeah, for sure. With game grader, you know, I needed a way because it's a one-man show here. I'm doing all 68 teams, and that's comparing across conferences and divisions. So I needed some kind of numerical formula just to be able to compare. You know, how does a middle-tier ACC look against a middle-tier SEC and vice versa? So basically what game grader is, it's all the stats and advanced stats from a game put into a number, and then I adjust it for the opponent's strength because beating up on, you know, Wake Forest is a lot different than beating up on Georgia. So it's all the key metrics of a game and adjusted for the opponent's strength. And then over the course of a season or a couple seasons, you can really see a trend. And that's one of the key factors in my prediction logic each year with the magazine as I look back to the advanced stats, the game grader, to really paint the story. Because sometimes a win-loss record is a little misleading, you know, based on the opponent's strength and close wins, margin of victory, all that stuff. So all my numbers into one, it's the game grader. And it's really strong in predicting outcomes and future seasons.
All right, so I really wanted you to explain that before I hit the audience with this, because this, I mean, I guess I shouldn't be surprised, because I was touting this team as a title contender, and I've been saying all offseason, I call them Lane Whiffen now for a reason, because Ole Miss last year finished number two, not in the SEC, in the country, in your game grader formula. And I mean, if no other, you need no more evidence to show that Ole Miss, they really should have made the playoff last year. And I'm not saying they would have won it, but I think they could have won it if they made the college football playoff. And I would bet, based on your game grader formula, that you think that you would agree with that statement.
Yeah, I was really high on Ole Miss in the preseason. I hyped them up as a playoff team. I was blown away by the talent that they were accumulating with Lane Kiffin from the portal. And yeah, they really performed like I thought. They were destroying teams. I mean, they blew out Georgia 28-10. That never happens. And they, you know, they have no one else to blame but themselves with the close losses. So it's kind of a confusing legacy. You look back and it's like, all right, well, they choked. They had a couple games they should have won there. They were dropping open touchdowns, missed field goals, stuff like that, and a couple three-point decisions. You got to win those games. So it is their fault. But I also think on the same, you know, on the other hand, they really, their formula worked. I mean, this recruiting and transfer machine, it worked. It churned out a ton of pros and statistically one of the strongest in the country. So while I can't sit here and say a 9-3 should have been in, I know that if they were in this bracket, I think they would have made some serious noise. I know that might hurt some Ole Miss fans to hear, but hey, it was a really strong team. And beyond the formula, here's a couple anecdotes. I mean, look at Kirby Smart. His quote about it, he was saying, that was the toughest team we played. They should be undefeated, end quote. And then if you look at the NFL draft, they sent 8 picks. That's a school record. So Kirby Smart saying it, the NFL scouts were saying it, and the numbers match it. I mean, this was one of the best teams in the country last year.
Mm-hmm. All right, and then final thing before we get into your SEC projections here, I just, you know, I thought this was interesting because, again, we'll get to Florida and Oklahoma, who you got fairly high, and I think rightfully so. But you also do a unique coaching carousel game grader where you kind of grade out the hires from the last several years, and Brent Venables in the 2022 coaching cycle, he's got the lowest grade. And Billy Napier, not far behind. Those are literally the lowest two graded Power Four coaching hires from the 2022 coaching cycle. How much does that concern you, given the expectations for Florida and Oklahoma this year?
Yeah, well, what we do here is, you know, every December when the coaching carousel heats up, you see everybody rush out and give these grades right away. You know, this hire is an A, this hire is a C. We don't know any of that until a couple years in. You want to see how they acquire talent, their coordinator picks, how they retain their talent and all that. So I like to look back a couple years in. And what I do is I compare the 4 years before the coach took over. So for a little bit of a program context. So the 4 years prior versus their sample size on campus, whether it be 2, 3, 4 years, I have them all listed there on the page, every coaching carousel cycle. And you're right, from 2022 right now as it stands is, yeah, you got Florida and Oklahoma dead last and second to last. And you know, part of that, if you're looking at the Venables case, for example, he was taken over for Lincoln Riley, and that was a little bit of a machine there. They won the conference every year in the Big 12 and some of the best offenses we've seen in a generation. So it was tough spot to take over. But hey, here's the thing. It's not holding me back from my predictions this year because although they're at the bottom of this graphic, I got them in the national top 15, both of them. And yeah, they have a gauntlet of a schedule, but if you're looking at team talent and how strong these are, I've got Florida 13th and Oklahoma 14th in the country.
Yeah, so let's get into it. But let's start at the top of the SEC. We said those nice things about Oklahoma. Now they're going to get mad because you got Texas number one in the SEC. How confident are you that the Longhorns can win the conference?
Yeah, well, I think they're right there. I mean, look at the last couple of years, back-to-back Final Fours. And in those games, they were at the goal line both times and came up short. I mean, the Washington game 2 years ago, Ohio State there at the goal line last year. So they're close. I like to call it the dynasty tier. And what I mean by that is they recruit at 5-star clips every year. They're sending a ton of guys to the pros, but they reload every year. And it's the teams chasing titles. To me, that tier, the dynasty tier, is really just Alabama, Georgia, and Ohio State. But I think Texas is right there knocking on the door. I think they're going to earn it this year. Yeah, I was blown away when I was building my advanced roster for Texas. I mean, there's five stars at every position, top 100 guys everywhere. So while they do replace a little bit in the trenches, offensive line, and a little bit of the secondary, this is one of the most talented rosters in America. The numbers look like it. Personnel looks like it. So they're my pick to win it and play Alabama in Atlanta.
Nice. So I love the fact that you're high on Alabama, because I'm right there with you, Brent. But what gives you confidence that year two for Kalen DeBoer that, we'll take a big step forward?
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, because since I launched Pick Six Previews, it's basically been the whole Nick Saban dynasty, the whole length of it. So it's funny to say this. Is Alabama underrated? Are they not being talked about enough? I think they are flying under the radar, as funny as it sounds. Yeah, what you have here, you still have the top recruiter in the country. They still are number one in the five-year average. They brought Ryan Grubb, a great coordinator. That's Kalen DeBoer's right-hand man over the years, and bringing him in. Now they get to pick their quarterback. I know that Jalen Milroe had some strengths to his game, running the ball and at times, but this is seriously now they get to pick their quarterback out of three good candidates. And then the thing that really caught my eye with Alabama is watching the NFL draft last year, and usually you see 10, 12 Bama players called. It's like a conveyor belt of draft picks. This year, only six. And you look at it, a lot of mid-round and maybe late-round guys that could have gone are now back in Tuscaloosa, packing that defense. That front seven is packed. And, in the book, I have the recruiting rankings, the transfer rankings, but also 2026 mock NFL draft. I'll look at next year's draft. I know it's early, but Alabama number one with 15 projected draft picks. So I think this is a really, really strong team and not being talked about enough nationally.
Right. And again, I still don't think we've got the full Kalen DeBoer experience yet in Tuscaloosa. But that this is like you said, it's almost like it's silly to say sleeping giant, but if they get him at full capacity, Look out for the Tide. Always look out for Georgia, though, which is fascinating. I did want to go back to your game grader just real quick. Georgia was 11th in the country last year, yet they won the conference again, and they did it in the championship game with a backup. Again, that's a credit to Kirby Smart. I know he's got all the talent in the world, but number three projection for Georgia. How close were you to putting Georgia in the SEC championship game again?
Yeah, well, very close. I have Alabama fourth in the country. I've got Georgia fifth in the country. They're really neck and neck for me. The game is in Athens this year. I actually got to see the game last year. I went down to Tuscaloosa, my first time at an SEC game. I picked luckily I picked a good one. One of the best games I've ever seen live, if not the best. I mean, of course, in the first half, you had Alabama steamrolling them. Carson Beck threw a ton of interceptions. We thought it was over. We were joking about beating the traffic at halftime. Of course, we didn't. And then a great comeback by Georgia. It's like a light switch went off and took the lead. And you saw Bama fans about to cry. But then Ryan Williams made one of the plays of the year, that spin move, that freaky move he made. And just an all-time game for me. And, blown away by the SEC experience, Mike. I got to get back there more often. I think I'm going to pick one game a year. And, I'm based in Pennsylvania. It's a dead zone of college football up here. I got to get down to the South more after seeing that. So,
yeah.
With Georgia, they're right there. I mean, this is another NFL conveyor belt, like I keep calling it. It's five stars everywhere. I was a little taken aback last year. They were hot and cold at times. They were missing tackles at times. The pass game maybe lacked some playmakers on the outsides. Now, I think they addressed that very well from the portal. It's really just hinges on Gunnar Stockton, his second year, how much of a gain he can make. I think they're going to be just fine. I've got them as a playoff at large, and we'll see about if they make it to Atlanta. I've got them a shade outside of it right now.
Mm-hmm. And then number four, you're a buyer in LSU. A lot of people are, you have them as a playoff team as well. What's got you buying into LSU?
Yeah, well, I think the SEC will get four this year. And with that, LSU is my fourth SEC. I think they're going to nab that last at-large spot. But what I like with LSU, it seems like they're kind of all in this year. And I say that because they put up the most money ever for a coordinator with Blake Baker last year. And he made a little bit of gains, but I think the second-year bonus there is going to be significant on defense. Put up a ton of money for this transfer class. It was rated number one in the country. You know how expensive it is to get some top-notch transfers. So the money involved with the coordinator, the transfers, and then they were able to get the Heisman favorite to come back with Garrett Nussmeier. He could have gone pro, and he's back in Baton Rouge. And you got to like this talent all across the board. So I'm high on LSU. I've got them fourth in the SEC, but that's good for an at-large spot in the national bracket.
And how close is, you got Texas A&M number five, how close are they to potentially being a fifth team from the SEC to making the playoff?
Well, I almost made the move there, but then I thought back to your quote about them calling them Texas 8-4, and I started started to rethink. Maybe I'm going a little crazy here putting them this high, but no, with Texas A&M, you know, I might sound crazy, but this year is different, right? It's, you know, because I do think it is different. You have a new head coach in his second season, Mike Elko, and he's been great everywhere. He turned Duke into a winner. He built great defenses there at Duke, at Wake Forest, at Notre Dame, even here for, 5 years at A&M. So I think the second-year coordinator and coach bonus there is huge. I love the offensive line. You got to have a couple NFLers there, a couple five-star kids. Le'Veon Moss back healthy at running back. It's really going to come down to Marcel Reed. He's very elusive in the pocket. We want to see him improve in passing here in his second season. But all this to say, I mean, this is a talented roster. It's veteran. They have a lot of guys back. Maybe a favorable schedule draw, too. If you look at it relatively, there's no real easy schedule in the SEC, but that helps. So I'm going with them for fifth.
Now, going back to LSU quickly, though, LSU, they host A&M. I know there's many, many different moving pieces and things to remain to be seen, but is it fair to say maybe the winner of that game, maybe they get the playoff spot and the loser won't?
That very well could be. And another swing game for A&M is the Notre Dame game, because Notre Dame I have projected as an at-large as well, even despite losing, you know, the quarterback and a lot of players. So that A&M Notre Dame and that A&M LSU, those could be play-in games or like, you know, eliminators if you look at it at the end of the year. So that's a great point.
Mm-hmm. And then interesting, Brett, again, this is why I've been tying these two together all offseason. It's fascinating to see that you got them tied for sixth, Florida and Oklahoma. How did you get to the tie part?
Yeah, well, I think, we agree on this. They're super talented teams, but they draw the hardest schedules I've ever seen in my life. I mean, Oklahoma is projected to play like 8 top 25 teams. It's outrageous. Same with Florida with, I think, 7 ranked opponents. Florida plays 6 of the top 8 in the conference, I think, if you chalk it up. And that's not even counting Tennessee. So, I forecast them pretty high just on talent alone. First with Florida, it's crazy how much a program can shift in a couple months. I mean, think back to early November. They wanted to run Napier out of town. Fan base was disengaged. Then they put out that statement of approval. They go rattle off 4 wins, a bowl, a top 10 recruiting class. Everything's trending up now all of a sudden. And one thing from Florida I liked was with DJ Lagway in the game, his plus minus when he's on the field and off the field, they were a top 10 offense per my numbers with him, bottom 10 without him. So I think if you get him back healthy for 2025, it's going to be a much improved offense throughout the year. And they had 4 guys from the lines of scrimmage that could have gone pro that both are, you know, all 4 returned to Gainesville. So I really like it. I like the talent here. I'm a little worried about that receiver getting injured because that was one of the high points I had. And their receiver room is stacked with 5 stars. But a lot to like from Florida. And then real quick with Oklahoma switching over there, again, Brent Venables, it's his 4th year. You'd expect a much improved team. The defense has been there. I mean, you hire Venables for a good defense. The defense has been strong. I think that'll continue. But what turned me on to Oklahoma this year is their offense, the way that they brought in this new scheme from Washington State, brought the coordinator and the quarterback together, a combo deal, signed some top recruits and transfers. So I think you're going to see Venables' best team yet. We know the defense is strong, but now the offense could be a stat giant this year.
Yeah, and so the only thing, though, that I've been saying here all offseason with Florida and Oklahoma, so expectations are rising, as they should, with all the pieces, with the coaching acquisitions, if you want to call them that. But you're 100% right. I mean, fans were down about a year ago or, you know, six, seven months ago. Now they're all bought back in. So to me, it's ultimate boom or bust for both Florida and Oklahoma because Billy Napier's not proven it in the SEC, and Brent Venables has been a head coach for 2-3 years, and 2 of the years have been very, very below average for Oklahoma. So I could see them both going to the playoff. I could see both the coaches being fired. Do you think that's a fair assessment?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, if you're looking at Oklahoma here, this is a blue blood program. We talked blue bloods, but undeniable their history, and they don't have losing seasons very often. So I don't think any Oklahoma fan would have signed up for, in their third year, 2024, a losing record with a loss to Navy in the Armed Forces Bowl. That's unacceptable for Oklahoma. So pressure's on. I like what he's done on defense, but it's a complete package here. You hired the guru coordinator defense guy with Venables. You also need to be able to pair an offense. So yeah, pressure's on for them. And with Florida, I think he might have quelled the pressure a little bit there with that November finish and the, you know, the rally there in the recruiting game, finally getting a top 10 class. It seems like the trend is up. But yeah, it's one of those cases where Florida and Oklahoma, they might be some of the most talented in the country, but with these schedules, if they go 7-5, how do you react to that? What's the legacy of a 7-5 team with that schedule and talent? So I don't know. It's going to be very interesting to watch.
And then also you got another tie here, Brett. Number 8 tied, Ole Miss and Auburn, the Hugh Freeze Bowl. I wish we could get that game back on the schedule. Can you break down Ole Miss and Auburn for us?
Yeah, these two are a little bit more of mysteries to me. I mean, they have high ceilings, but maybe some lower floors too. With Ole Miss, we talked about how high I was of them last year. I think it was an all-timer for them. Now you go through a bit of a transition, just sending 8 guys to the pros, a school record, starting over at quarterback. Now, again, they reloaded as usual from the portal, stacked another top 5 transfer class, and they hit some home runs. I mean, their receiver room is completely rebuilt. Top tight end in the country they signed from Arkansas. And then their defensive front, too. You worry about them losing so many draft picks, but they reloaded. I think they're going to remain strong. I've got them in my top 20 nationally, but just a little bit too much change to really contend for an SEC title this year. But I do trust their process. I think they're going to be a player most years under Lane Kiffin. So that's Ole Miss. With Auburn, I think I'm higher than most on Auburn. I have them 20th in the country. And I don't think you're going to find that elsewhere. I think that a lot of people are selling this program right now, but I'll tell you what I like about him. It's that receiver. It could be the best receiver core in the country outside of Columbus, Ohio. 5 stars galore. And then I liked on defense, they had a couple guys placed on the all true freshman team. This is a thing that 247 Sports does, showing you the true freshmen that were emerging. They had a couple youngsters last year that are now back as second year starters. They recruit well. You know this. They get good transfers. So I like it as a top 20 team. And better than their record showed. You look back, they had all these close losses last year and worst field goal percentage in the country. That stuff doesn't tend to replicate year over year. So I think they're stronger than their record and solid top 20 team.
Well, Cousin Shane was going to be here till he saw you got Tennessee 10th in the SEC. Explain yourself, Brent.
Yeah, no, I know. That's a tough one. But with Tennessee coming into the spring, I thought the big question was going to be the offensive line rebuild, or how they're going to get more explosive vertical passing back. And then all of a sudden this Nico drama dropped in the middle of April. So really just took the attention off the other parts of the offense. But with Tennessee, I see half the team looks elite and the other half is a total rebuild. So the defense I love. I mean, they were stout last year, number 5 in my numbers defensively last year, and a lot of it's back. I know you lose James Pierce, but so much of that front 7's back and it looks strong. So I love the defense, and that's strong enough to get a top 25 spot from me. It's on offense. I mean, really every spot is up for grabs. You're losing the all SEC running back, the 3 receivers, 4 linemen, and then the Nico quarterback change. So a lot of question marks on offense. I will say the optimist spin here is that the schedule's manageable. I mean, it seems like one of the more manageable. You got 4 of the bottom teams in the conference there, Kentucky, Arkansas, Vandy, Mississippi State. That's 4 wins right there, even if only the defense shows up. So, I think it'll be solid again, but I don't see a playoff return.
Mm-hmm. Well, someone that's looking to try to get into that playoff, and they nearly did it last year, is South Carolina. You got number 11. What do you like about the Gamecocks?
Yeah, I love their quarterback. Lenora Sellers is electric to watch. He really burst onto the scene last year. I like how they played against their toughest opponents last year, and they really shined at times out of nowhere, too. I mean, they started there, 3-3? I know the LSU game was a bit questionable, but 3-3, and then they rattled off a ton of wins. So congrats, Shane Beamer, on getting them refocused and grinding out a nice season. Now, they do lose a lot. Some questions I have are on that defense. That defensive line loses almost everybody. The Nagurski winner, Kennard, is gone. I do love Dylan Stewart. He made my All-American team. But otherwise, it's a lot of rebuilding. All 3 linebackers gone. The secondary, you lose some guys. So in this crowded conference, this deep conference, I've got them at 11th, but still a competitive team.
Mm-hmm. And then number 12, this is one of the teams that has really confounded me this offseason, Brett. Missouri with a really nice transfer class, recent trend of winning big, yet I can't really disagree with your rankings. I know their fans will disagree with this ranking, but what do you see there for Missouri?
Yeah, you know, my hat's off again to what they're building there. They've elevated their recruiting profile to the point where they're a top 20 team every year in recruiting. Now back-to-back top 10 transfer hauls too. That catches your eye. But yeah, I think you're losing some of the key parts that made Missouri special, and that was the receiver room last year. I mean, one of the best in the country. You had an all-timer with Luther Burden. Their quarterback was an absolute warrior. I mean, the game where he left the stadium with an injury, goes to the hospital, comes back to finish a win. I mean, these are like legendary stories. So my hat's off to that team last year. But a lot of the parts that we loved about Missouri are now gone. So it's a transitional type year for me. Maybe in other conferences in a transitional year, they could contend. But this conference is so stacked that I think that, you know, in a transition, they're going to fall a little bit. But we'll see. I mean, Prabula might surprise, might be a dominant force there at quarterback. We haven't seen too much of him. He was pretty good running the ball for Penn State at times, but a lot of questions for me this year.
Mm-hmm. And then number 13, Arkansas, Talen Green. He could be the breakout star of the conference this year. What are you seeing from the Razorbacks?
Yeah, I like him a lot. It's just everything else around him is the question. And, you know, when you're tracking this transfer portal and you're looking at where players are going and coming, and it seems like Arkansas continues to lose starters. So they're not backups, but these are like all conference kinds of guys that they're getting either outbid or not able to retain. It seems like a lot of them go to Ole Miss, but I don't know what's going on there. But again, it just seems like, yeah, the strongest parts of the team have now transferred out or gone pro. So I have them down at 13th. I do like Green at quarterback, but it's just another transfer lottery. We'll see if they hit. I mean, they're bringing in like 30 players and losing 30 every year. It's just, I don't know. It's hit or miss, but I have them trending towards the bottom of the conference.
And then one team that, I mean, they were just a sensation last year. Can they duplicate it? Vanderbilt, 14. Diego Pavia, he may be my favorite trash talker in the country now. What do you see for Clark Lee and company?
Yeah, well, you know what's refreshing with him? We need more guys like that, more persona in the sport. I mean, nowadays everyone's so like political answers, coach speak, you know, don't want to rustle any feathers. He tells it how it is, man. The guy is confident. Win or lose, he's confident, which we like. And certainly had arguably the best win in Vanderbilt history last year. The win over Alabama was cool to see. Clark Lee's vision for the program really come to fruition, tore down those goalposts, threw them in the river. You love to see it. So, you know, if you're Vandy, this is one of their highest expectations of all time, because coming off that team, they bring back 18, 19 starters. Everyone's back in town. So we'll see. But again, when you look at the fundamentals, if you're looking at the recruiting trends, the transfer trends, their advanced stats in my book, it was a great story, but I still see them towards the bottom of the league. But I did put this in there, the last line. I said, beware, because Pavia, he has a knack for proving everybody wrong. So who knows? They might go up and shatter through this expectation.
Mm-hmm. And then trying to prove people wrong, also Kentucky, number 15. Oh, man, it seems kind of bleak up there in Lexington right now, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, Mark Stoops keeps telling everybody, don't worry, everyone stay calm. But he's got shirts and everything made up. I don't like where it's trending right now. And, you know, you go and lose Vince Marrow, too. It's rare that I would talk about an assistant coach, but he seemed like really the glue that was keeping together the program, a great recruiter, great morale guy. And he went and left. Not only did he leave, he went to Louisville, the bitter rival. So I don't know what's going on over at Kentucky. You saw a lot of transfers out. You saw former players from the program speaking down about what's happening. So I don't know. I used to like what they had there, their big blue wall, their offensive line, and their stout defense. But the things you think of Kentucky being strong at usually, it seems like are question marks this year. So I have them towards the bottom of the league, and I don't see an overnight fix here.
Mm-hmm. And then last, we got Mississippi State. I mean, is there any optimism there after a winless SEC season?
It was pretty brutal last year. I mean, it was hard to watch. Their defense collapsed, but I think you got to just trust the process here. It was going to be a multi-year rebuild anyway. You know, if you hire an offensive guru like Lebby, you got to start there. You want to see a top 25 caliber offense. You want to at least get that ball mastered and then start to figure out the defense. But it's another transfer lottery here. I just called Arkansas and Kentucky that. It's the same deal here. A ton of transfers in. They're pretty much just restarting for a year or two. So I have them chalked up at the bottom of the league. Hopefully we'll be talking higher of them in 2026.
Mm-hmm. And then if I could put you on the spot, Brett, which one are you most confident that you absolutely nailed their position And I'm going to cheat a little bit and say you can't take the bottom two and you can't take the top two. So no Texas, no Bama, no Kentucky, no Mississippi State. Any team that you're most confident that you nailed their projection in the SEC?
Dang, yeah, I was going to go with Alabama because that was supposed to be the the underrated hot take, if you can ever call it that. But if Bama's off the table, I mean, you got to like Georgia being in the top three. I they're not going to fall below that, I don't think. There's just too much talent there. So I'll give you Georgia on the upside. And, you know, I'll go with Arkansas at 13. I don't see how they – because I do see a divide. I see that top 12 we talked about going all the way down, you know, Auburn, Tennessee, South Carolina, Missouri. I see a massive gap there to the bottom four. So you'll notice I have Missouri right outside the top 25, but then Arkansas way outside of that. So I'll go Arkansas at 13th as a lock. You know, I love Sam Pittman. I like what they did on offense, but it's just – too many starters are leaving the program. So I'm going to go with them at 13 as the lock.
Mm-hmm. And then last thing, really appreciate your time. But given that there are seemingly 12, we go about 12 deep in the SEC of potentially really quality programs, how much excitement and uncertainty does that lead for this upcoming season in the SEC in your mind?
Yeah, well, you know, covering all four leagues, I dig in, I get to see this. And if you're looking at any metric you pick, I mean, recruiting rankings, transfer rankings, NIL spending, NFL draft picks, it's the SEC every year at the top. And I know the Big Ten has two national titles in a row, but aside from that, this is the deepest conference out there by far. I've got half my top 20 is SEC teams. It's incredible. You know, so I think it's the most talented league. You can look at the quarterback storyline being intriguing. So many up and coming stars, a quarterback in the league. So that's fascinating to me. And yeah, you could argue so many teams can make a playoff run. I know I went with LSU in that fourth spot, but really it's wide open. You could argue so many different teams. And based off how the tiebreaker scenarios end up or how the non-conference goes, you're going to have a lot of 10-2, a lot of 9-3 again. And based on how that playoff bracket shakes out, you might get four or five teams in there. So to answer your question, yeah, it is very intriguing. All these games matter, and you got so many teams at the table here that could contend. So, yeah, it's the deepest conference for me, the best conference of 2025, and they'll show us that in the fall.
And then one last time, Brett, before you go, can you tell our audience how to buy the Pick Six Previews magazine? And I've said this online. I should have led with this also, but as someone that, I mean, I'm just consumed by the SEC 365 days of the year, yet when I get your magazine, I'm still finding all kinds of nuggets on literally every single team that I was unaware of. So if I'm finding that, I can only imagine how valuable this magazine will be to any SEC football fan out there. Can you tell them how to get their hands on the magazine one more time?
Yeah, well, huge thanks for that. That was the goal with this. I wanted to give a really in-depth look at every team position by position. So if that's reflected for you, that's great to hear. I appreciate it. It's picksixpreviews.com. That's all spelled out. It's only available on the website there, picksixpreviews.com. We have the digital version, which is emailed immediately. We have the hard copy magazine. And then if you buy the hard copy, you do get the digital emailed too. And then if you're looking for content past the preseason, if you're looking in season, we now have the Pick Six Plus, which is every Tuesday morning emailed out. All the advanced stats, all the betting trends, projections, picks, everything you could want on one page. You know, it's hard to scramble and open 30 tabs in your browser every Tuesday or Wednesday looking at games, but it's all here on one page for you. So I encourage you to go check that out. But yeah, I appreciate the praise. It's cool to see you guys grow over, you know, I've been doing this together with you for what, almost 10 years. So really cool to see it take off. Like I said, seeing you on TV, on Netflix, all over SEC Media Days, on Feinbaum. You guys are doing great, man. So continue it and good luck in 2025.
Absolutely. Same to you, my friend. Thank you so much and hope to hear from you soon.
Okay. Thank you.